Creating Change with Doug Foresta, a show dedicated to creativity and emotional healing. Creating Change on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Doug Foresta.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Creating Change. This is Doug Foresta, and today we're going to talk about your brain and my brain and all of our brains. Of course, creativity is, I would say, that having a healthy brain is an important part of being creative. And so my guest today is Ruth Curran, and we're going to be talking about brain health and why it's important and how to achieve it. She is the author of the book, Being Brain Healthy. She drew on her experience successfully overcoming a traumatic brain injury suffered in an automobile accident to become an expert on maximizing brain health and function through lifestyle modification and turning up the noise on life, which I'm excited about learning more about that. And you can learn more about her at rollingmulliganpublishing.com. That's rollingmulliganpublishing.com. And of course, we'll have that link on the show page. Ruth Curran, thank you so much for joining me on Creating Change.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. So let's start with the idea of, I know that you talk about brain health. Can you first define what you mean by brain health? What does it mean to have a healthy brain?
Having a healthy brain is being able to think, function, and live a maximized life. So when we talk about being brain healthy, it's a lifestyle choice. Your brain loves to be happy. Your brain rewards you for things that make you feel good by opening up pathways. So really, when you make yourself happy, when you're doing things that maximize what you do, like being creative, like doing things that serve your purpose, you're maximizing your brain health. So it's all a big circle. It's about a lifestyle choice and about understanding how your behavior affects your brain.
Yeah, and certainly, like I said, I mean, this is a great topic for creating change because, and tell me, you're certainly much more of an expert in this area than I am, but my understanding is that exercising creativity does have benefits, right, for your brain health. Is that,
Absolutely. Oh no, you're right on target. Exercising your creativity keeps pathways in your brain open. It makes you think in more complicated ways. It makes you use more of your brain. So the more of your brain you're using, the better off you're going to be. Thinking creatively, problem solving, looking at things from different angles, changing your perspective just slightly. All those things are great ways to keep your brain active and alive. And a well-nourished brain means that you're firing the chemical and electrical activity in your brain. You can almost feel it. You know, you can feel that when you hit that creative moment, you can almost feel the good chemical and electrical activity going on in your brain and in your body.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that because I really have that experience for sure. Like if I think of an idea and I go, oh my gosh, I want to do this. And it is. It's like there's this, you can feel the dopamine, you know, rushing in.
Oh,
There's definitely a high too.
Right. And that, you know, and the whole feeling of goosebumps. It's a chemical and electrical reaction to something that really excites you. And think about all those things that excite you. Think about all those things that make you feel good. That's nourishing your brain.
Well, I want to make sure, too, that people understand a little bit of your story, because I think it's very relevant, obviously, to how you came to write this book. Can you explain to people your story and how you came to write Being Brain Healthy?
Sure. About 12 years ago, I got in a car accident, and I was hit into oncoming traffic, so my brain basically ping-ponged inside my head, and that put me in a fog for about 18 months. The thing to keep in mind, though, is that I walked out of that emergency room looking 100% normal. Looked like nothing changed, nothing was wrong, nobody looked at my brain. So I had this process of figuring out, first, that there was something wrong and I couldn't tell anybody about it, and second, how the heck do I get out of this whole fog that kind of descended on my life? So it was a process. And in that process, I figured out there was a point that I hit where I stopped looking for that intervention. I stopped looking for someone to come in with a magic wand and say, this is going to make you better. And I realized I needed to do this myself. And the way to do it myself was to make myself feel better. So it was finding those things that allowed me to fire up those parts of my brain that just weren't being active and weren't alive at that moment. So it was, that's what inspired me, I guess is the best way to say it, to write Being Brain Healthy.
Now, I know that you said there are two misconceptions about brain health that drive you crazy. So I would love if you could share those with our audience.
Absolutely. The first one is that we're born with a certain number of brain cells, and we kill them as we live, and then we just live with that.
Right.
And that's so not true. All the research that's coming out now, all the research that's been coming out for the last 10 years, shows that we are actively growing new neurons. And actually, exercising, getting aerobic exercise, will encourage your brain to grow new neurons. So there's that emphasis on finding the right balance, you know, and finding all of those things. We are not stuck in this place. We're not stuck. Brain health is a hopeful thing, and it's something that we can grab onto and move forward with.
Now, this was only, my understanding is that this is only a relatively recent thing that we understand that the brain can actually grow, right? That this is not something that, this was a misconception that was pretty much held, this was a held truth that your brain just, you get a certain amount of brain cells and they just die and die and die and then eventually you're,
It was one of those written in stone truths that people just accepted. Nobody even questioned it till about 10 years ago. And what's interesting is the first research into how the brain changes as we age, for example, was done with very old people. That's not a very delicate way to put that, but we were looking at 85 plus and looking at their brains. There's that sweet spot that we hit in midlife where not only are we not are we not impaired, we actually think a little bit better in a whole bunch of different ways. I mean, if you think about how you problem solve right now, I don't know about you, but my 20-year-old brain could not think its way around the problems that I can right now. Wouldn't have the capability, doesn't have the experience, doesn't have the ability to cross-function, to think in multiple pathways.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to go back to my 20-year-old brain.
for a whole lot of reasons.
I wouldn't be doing this podcast for sure.
Right. But, you know, 20-year-old brains are highly creative. They react quickly. They think well. As we age, though, that thinking process just gets more complicated, and it gets more, there's more depth to it, and there are more things that we can do, which, again, allows us to unlock that creativity.
Well, so that goes to the sort of the second misconception, right? The idea that we think that older brains are not, just don't perform as well.
Yes, exactly. And that's a huge misconception. You know, and we all do it. We all worry about, I can't think of that person's name, or why did I come to this room? Or, you know, what's the right word for that? Younger people, I have been watching. Younger people do the same thing. They just don't care as much.
Right. They're not worried. Yeah, they're not worried the way we are. we're losing our minds. That makes sense.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's not a matter of, it's a matter of putting it all in perspective and understanding that we have these gifts that came with age, as well as the ability to create new neurons, and as well as the ability to route where our brain goes, this whole concept of neuroplasticity, which you're right, is so new. We can shape our brains. We can shape how well we think and how well we function.
In fact, neuroplasticity really goes to the heart of this whole, really what this show is about when I started it, about creating change, was the idea that, you know, you think about like psychodynamic theory, and which said that, you know, Freud pretty much said, you know, by the time you're five, your personality is formed and that's it, you know, and you're done and the rest of your life is just playing out your childhood. And what's so exciting to me is the fact that we do have, because now we understand that we can form new neurons, that we can literally create change inside our brain. If we can create new pathways inside our brain, to me, that says we can create new pathways in our lives.
Correct. Yes. And that's the whole really exciting thing about all of the research in being brain healthy now is that we can take our behaviors, we can take what we do every day and make them more brain healthy. And let me give you an example of that. So it's not about adding more to your life, because everybody's life is so stuffed right now. You know, I don't have room to fit more things in. So it's about taking what we already do and maximizing it, turning up the noise, amplifying it, giving each moment a little bit more color. For example, you hit 3 o'clock in the afternoon, a little bit low energy, and you think, let's pick up an apple. So that's just a normal, I'm going to replenish my energy with this apple. Think about holding that apple in your hand. What does that feel like? Is it smooth? Is it cold? What does it feel like? Can you roll it in your fingers? And then you lift it to your mouth. Take a bite, and you feel and sense, activate all that sensory experience. What do you smell? How does it feel when that juice explodes in your mouth? What does the pulp feel like as you're chewing it and it goes down your throat? Every time you add a sensory experience, you're opening new pathways in your brain. So you're amplifying the experience. You're taking that thing that you're going to do anyway because you need the energy to get through the rest of the day successfully, and you're making it this sensory experience and activating all those pathways in your brain.
As you say that, I think about, I mean, would there be a connection between that and, you know, what's been called mindfulness? Like kind
Absolutely.
Of slowing down and...
Absolutely. There's all kinds of great research now, too, about mindfulness and meditation and what that actually does for brain health. And they're finding that people with a predisposition for dementia, for a genetic predisposition for dementia, can delay the onset of that dementia by regularly practicing meditation, by being more mindful, by you know, specific protocols, of course. But it's that being present in the moment and adding all the color and all the flavor and amplifying that experience, making it bigger, making it feel better as well, that keeps multiple pathways open in your brain. You're thinking, you're creating, you're problem solving, you're activating all of your senses. We do about 70% of our daily work with vision. You see something, and that's how you recognize it. Opening up what you hear, what you taste, what you smell, what you feel. Tactile senses, really, really key to making an experience more creative, too. You know, the more elements you add, the more creative you are.
Now, you mentioned dementia as, you know, something that obviously when we think about brain diseases, dementia is certainly one of them. What are some other conditions or diseases that affect the brain?
That's a phenomenal question, and one we don't ask often enough.
Yeah.
There are logical answers to that question, like multiple sclerosis, you know, is absolutely a brain-related disease because it's neurological. Parkinson's disease, absolutely. Alzheimer's, which we all know about and everyone's scared to death of, and only 2% of us will get. So that's something also to keep in mind. But there are other things like cures for diseases. Chemotherapy affects how your brain works. It affects your chemical and electrical makeup in your body, and anything that affects the chemical and electrical makeup in your body affects how your brain works. So chemotherapy is a huge cognitive fogger, for lack of a better way of saying that. Anesthesia can sometimes have that same effect in some cases. There are all kinds of other things like pain. Pain masks thinking. It masks your ability to think. You know, it really hinders in those ways because it shuts off pathways. Overstress is another one. You know, when you don't turn off that stress switch, it's another way of affecting your thinking. So there are all kinds of diseases. It's not just traumatic brain injury, which is huge, and it's not just those diseases that we commonly think of that affect the brain. It's all these other things that we don't think about, like pain and chemotherapy and anesthesia.
So not only are there physical factors, but it sounds like also, I know from looking at your work, it sounds like, Ruth, that there are psychological or social factors that also affect brain health?
Absolutely. So there are a couple of things. Being social is a great activity that will fire up chemical activity. So if you think about anything that you do in terms of how complicated is this activity, how many things am I doing at once? What am I activating in my brain? It's a great way to frame it so that you're maximizing your experience. Being social can be being social online. It's that interaction. It's that interplay between other people. You have to react to what somebody else says. You know, even if you're as simple as a Twitter chat, you know, as trivial sounding as a Twitter chat is, you're reacting to what somebody else is saying. So that's a way of being social. It also, we've learned a lot from the opposite of that, too. We've learned a lot from what happens to people when they're isolated. There are certain areas of the brain that shrink when people are isolated. There's changes, physical changes that happen in the brain with, you know, all surrounding being social. So there are other types of things. Taking a positive tact on life has also been shown to increase chemical activity in the brain, you know, through functional MRI. Functional MRI is the breakthrough for all brain health, for all brain health discoveries. We can actually see what the brain is doing while it's in motion. So that's been a great advancement in research.
This is a question that that I think is an exciting question about what's the number one thing that I can do, not just me, but what's the one thing that we could do to boost our brain health?
The number one thing is put quality of life front and center. Do things that increase the quality of your life that make you feel good. Keep in mind that the more something makes you feel, the more emotion that it taps into, you're going to remember it better. You're going to activate more of your brain, and you're going to send that great chemical and electrical bath across your brain. And your brain's going to thank you and reward you for that. It's kind of like after a good hard workout, you feel good. Your brain is saying, thank you for this great bath. Let me reward you.
What's exciting about that to me, again, goes back to the idea that a lot of times people say, well, you know, I'll do the thing that I enjoy, or I'll be creative, or I'll do that stuff. You know, after I get through the important things in my life, like being miserable and doing things I don't like to do.
Right.
But what I hear you saying is that, in fact, it's very important for us, to our brain health, to do the things that we like to do.
Oh, it's critical. Absolutely critical. And the other thing that research is now bearing out that's so exciting to me is that being purposeful, finding and living your purpose is a huge thing that you can do, not just for your own personal brain health, but for the impact around you. And you watch that impact, and that increases the quality of your life, the quality of the life around you. So this cumulative effect really is us taking care of our brains. I think that's really incredibly cool.
Now, I'm curious, I mean, obviously, you know, you wrote the book Being Brain Healthy. What was your intention in writing the book? I mean, what are you hoping to achieve with it? What impact do you hope it'll have?
I hope that the people will find hope. And I hope that, you know, that people will see that there are things that you can do every day, and that there are things that you and I can do to enhance our experience, not necessarily add to our lives. When you think about doing something that promotes your health or supports your health in any way, you always think about, oh, I don't have time for that. I don't have time, another 30 minutes to take on this exercise or to take this quiz or to go to this website and play these games. I don't have time for all of those things to add in. I hope that people will see that they can take the activities that they're doing to support their lives right now, and make them more. Give them more body, give them more color, amplify that experience in a way that supports your brain health. I don't know about you, but I don't know anybody who's not afraid of what's going to happen to their brain as they get older. me included, knowing what I know, knowing I'm taking all of the steps that I'm taking, we all have that fear in the back of our minds that, you know, this is going to happen to us. We watch it happening to people around us. The best way to say, no, not me, is to do more and be more and make your experience more supportive of the quality of your life. Does that make sense?
Yes. I mean, basically what it really sounds like is that the science of brain health is supporting the idea about really living the kind of life that, you know, that's why I started the show, to advocate for it, which is to live a full creative life, to do what you enjoy, and to really fully engage. And it sounds like in a way that there's a big payoff for our brain when we do that.
Absolutely. And for our ability to thrive as we age, and our ability to think as we age, and our ability to live a good quality of life as we age. So all of those things are really connected together. And it just, I think that's so gratifying, the whole idea that the more we do to be creative, the more we do to support our own lives and our own quality, the better our life is going to be, not just from aesthetic perspective, but from a biological perspective. There's a couple of things you can do to ground that as well. Being aware of your breathing, as simple as that. You know, you find yourself in a situation where it doesn't feel like it's supporting your best quality of life. Take a step back, take a deep breath, feel the cool air go in, feel the warm air go out. That returns this balance in your body that we call homeostasis, this comfortable spot where everything in your body, all your organs, all your systems are working at a great level. So we can take ourselves back to that spot. And I just find that so exciting. And research is really bearing that out.
Yeah, I mean, that's exciting too, because when you think about all those ancient mindfulness practices, right, it's like they didn't have MRIs and fMRIs, but somehow they were onto something.
Right. And you know what that was? They knew how they felt.
They were
in touch, right, in touch with the here and now, in touch with their relationship to their bodies, their body's relationship to their behavior, and how the whole thing ties together. So you're right. We should take a lesson from all that ancient knowledge and go back to understanding how we treat our bodies and how we treat ourselves and how that affects our quality of life and our ability to thrive.
And it makes perfect sense that, I mean, with the exception, I guess, of addictions, pretty much if something really feels good, the chances are that it's actually good for us. You know, most of the things that feel good are generally tend to be good for us.
Yes. And addiction is an interesting thing to bring up briefly.
I know. We'll have to do a whole other episode on addiction and brain health. I'd love to get your perspective on that.
Yeah, because, you know, you can become addicted to these amazing experiences too.
Right, right.
You can, and addiction is something that's so much more complicated than that. And addictions can be used to your benefit. I know that sounds crazy. It's kind of like the other huge topic is stress can be used to your benefit as well. It's taking those things that don't serve us and making them serve us. That's a whole other conversation.
Well, we're going to have to, exactly. We'll have to continue the conversation.
Yeah,
Ruth Kern, how can people get the book Being Brain Healthy?
There are a couple of ways. RollingMulliganPublishing.com, or you can go to Rolling Mulligan's Facebook page and click on the Shop Now button, and I've got a podcast special up. So click on the podcast special, and I will send you two books for the price of one.
Wow, thank you. Ruth Kern, thank you so much for joining me on Creating Change. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Till next time, keep creating. The world needs your gifts. This is Doug Foresta.